From Quality Radio Productions, it's the Upstate Radio Theater, an hour of sounds from the golden age of radio, coming to you from New York's Finger Lakes region. I'm Jake Longwell. We'll open the hour with some thrills and chills as we take a journey with The Mysterious Traveler, portrayed by Maurice Tarplin, who also has another small role in this episode, as you'll hear. This long-running series on the Mutual Broadcasting System, program number 142, is what we have for you now, as originally broadcast February 24th, 1948. Its title, The Man Who Died Twice.
Mutual presents The Mysterious Traveler.
This is The Mysterious Traveler, inviting you to join me on another journey into the realm of the strange and terrifying. I hope you will enjoy the trip, that it will thrill you a little and chill you a little. So settle back, get a good grip on your nerves, and be comfortable, if you can, as you hear the story I call The Man Who Died Twice. Tonight, we're going to delve into a murder most strange, one that confused many of the greatest legal minds of our day. My story begins in the mansion of Judge Marshall, situated high on a hill overlooking a large New England city. It is early evening, and Judge Marshall, one of the state's foremost jurists, is sitting in his library reading a legal brief. As he intently reads, the French door leading to the porch slowly and silently swings open, revealing a huge white-haired man standing in the doorway. His tremendous bent frame shows the remains of a man who's been a giant in his youth. Suddenly, the judge becomes aware that he isn't alone. He quickly turns and sees his visitor.
Who are you? What are you doing here?
Don't you remember me, Judge?
No, I can't say that I do.
Think back. Think back 16 years when you were judge at a murder trial.
16 years? My good man, I presided over a great many murder trials, as you call them, and I still don't know who you are.
Just keep looking at me, Judge, and think back. Think back.
You do look familiar.
I'll help you remember. My name is Adams. Luke Adams.
Luke Adams? Yes, yes, now I remember. I sentenced you to prison for 25 years for killing a man.
yeah, for killing a man.
You've aged, so that's why I didn't recognize you.
Yes. It's hard to believe I'm only 45, isn't it?
I presume you've been paroled?
Yes.
What do you want?
I want to tell you my story, Judge. I want to tell you all the things I never got a chance to tell you at my trial.
As far as I'm concerned, Mr. Adams, the case is closed. Now, if you don't mind,
then we'll reopen it. I've come to tell you my story, and you're going to listen.
Very well, Mr. Adams. Sit down.
Thank you. I don't know if you recall, Judge, but my wife, Millie, was a beautiful woman.
Yes, I remember. She had the kind of beauty a man can't forget.
Yes. Yes, and I suppose that's what caused it all. Millie and I grew up together, and I guess I loved her from the moment we met. The only reason she married me was because of the money I'd inherited. And when I lost it in 29, things were never the same again between us. She hated living in a small village, trying to stretch $1 into two. Sometimes I think her smiling at other men was her way of getting revenge on me for the way we had to live. The angrier I got, the more she flirted, until she almost drove me out of my mind. Things went on like that, day after day. month after month.
Here comes Luke.
Hello, Luke. Getting home from work a bit early today, huh?
Yeah.
Your missus and I were just talking about how hot it is.
Yeah.
You must have found it fierce, breaking stone in the quarry in this heat.
Uh-huh.
Well, I've got to be going. See you again.
What was he hanging around for?
He just happened to be going past. Stopped to say hello. Is there anything wrong in that?
It's funny. Every time I see you talking to someone, it's always a man. How come I never see you talking to women?
Because all the women in this village are a bunch of cats. They hate me because I'm beautiful and they're not.
All right. But I'm warning you, I don't want to see Chuck Riker or any other men hanging around here. If I do, there's going to be trouble.
The days went by. Millie hardly spoke to me. Nothing I said or did seemed to please her. And yet, just knowing she'd be there when I got home was enough for me. And one day I come home from work. She wasn't alone.
Oh, hello, Luke.
Home early, aren't you?
What's he doing here?
Chuck was going past, stopped in to say hello.
Just like that, huh? I thought I told you not to let this happen again.
If Chuck wants to call on me, why shouldn't he? Right, Chuck?
Sure. After all, Luke, there's no use being old-fashioned. We've all known each other since we were kids. What harm is there an old friend dropping in and... Why are you looking at me like that?
There's lipstick on your cheek. You'd better let me wipe it off for you.
Now, wait a minute, Luke. I can explain. There's no use fighting over...
Get up.
Now, wait a minute, Luke. Can't we...
Get up. Talking won't help. You'll have to fight your way out. That's it. Pick up that poker. Come on, come on. What are you waiting for?
Okay, you asked for it. You're gonna get it. Go. No. Oh, no.
This'll learn you.
No.
Not to hang around other men's wives.
Oh.
Before I'm through with you, no woman will want to look at you.
Luke, stop it. He's out on his feet. Stop it.
How does he look to you now, Millie? I'll throw him out, then you and I will settle a few things.
Come on, you. Out you go.
Here's a push to start you on your way. Now we come to you.
You think I'm afraid of you? Go ahead, hit me. Ruin my looks so no man will ever want to look at me. Go ahead.
Millie, don't talk like that. You know how much I love you. Why are you doing this to me? I know I haven't been able to give you all the things you want, but that's no reason to treat me this way. I won't stand for it, Millie.
All right, then, let's separate. You go your way, and I'll go mine.
No. No, I couldn't live without you. You know that. I'll never let you go. You're mine, do you hear?
Oh, stop it.
Millie, don't turn away from
you
me.
You make me sick.
All right. But I'll never give you up. Never.
Millie just stood there looking at me. Contempt in her eyes. I knew we were through, and yet I couldn't give her up. I clung to the small hope that something would happen that would change her, make her feel toward me as I felt about her. Long, lonely weeks went by. I knew that Millie and I had been the scandal of the village ever since the day I'd beaten Chuck Riker. At the quarry, the men whispered to each other when they thought I wasn't looking. I could only give vent to my rage by smashing rocks into 1,000 small pieces. Then, one day in the autumn, an opportunity came. An opportunity to escape the villagers and their gossip. Millie! Millie, where are you?
Here. What is it?
Millie, you've always wanted to get away from the village. Now we have a chance.
How?
Well, I met Mr. Anderson this morning. You remember him. He's an old friend of my father's.
What about it?
Well, he owns a small farm which he's willing to sell for only $300 down.
You mean you want to buy it?
Yeah. Just think of it, Millie. A place of our own, 20 miles out in the country, away from the village and the gossip.
Do you really think I'd move to a farm? Cut myself off from everything?
Well, it's what you need, Millie. A home of your own, a place to work and build. You'd love it, Millie. I know you would.
You mean you would? Don't think I don't know what's going on in that head of yours. You want to cut me off from everybody, take me someplace where you can keep an eye on me day and night. Well, I'm not having any part of it.
But, Millie, you said yourself you're not happy here.
But I don't want a farm. I want to live in a city. I want to have everything that other women have.
But we can't go to the city. There's no work to be had. We're living in a depression.
Are we? Well, if you can't give me what I want, there are plenty of other men who can.
They'd better not try. I'm warning you, Millie, I'll kill any man who tries to take you away from me. Weeks went by. Weeks in which Millie scarcely spoke to me. We lived as strangers in an uneasy truce. I worked from dawn to twilight at the quarry, and as I worked, I could sense the men gossiping about Millie and myself. I would think of Millie and wonder what she was doing at that very moment.
Steve.
Yeah, baby?
I can't stand it anymore. I can't go on living with Luke. Oh, he stares at me with those big cow-like eyes of his, watching every move I make.
Well, you'll just have to go on putting up with it for the time being.
It's all right for you to say that. You don't have to live with him. Sometimes I wonder if you really love me.
Oh, don't talk like that, baby. You know I love you. Would I be putting my neck out like this if I didn't?
Nobody knows we're meeting secretly.
Maybe not, but sooner or later someone will see us together and then there'll really be trouble.
Afraid?
I've never run away from a fight yet. I don't mind telling you, I wouldn't like to mix with that gorilla husband of yours.
I know, Steve. You've got to be careful.
Don't worry. I intend to be. Just let me raise some dough, baby. Figure out one or two angles, then you and I'll be off for the big city.
What about Luke? He'd be sure to follow. You don't know what he's like, Steve. He'd never rest till he found us. And when he did...
Yeah, you don't have to draw me any pictures. I know that type. If we run off, we'd never have a minute's peace. We'd always be wondering when he was going to catch up with us.
Yes. Oh, Steve, what are we going to do?
I don't know, baby. I don't know. We'll just have to sit tight for the time being and be careful not to be seen together.
All right, Steve.
Oh, cheer up, baby. We'll make the big city yet, and until then, we've got this.
Oh, yes, Steve. Yes.
Yeah, Millie. You want me?
Yes. I've moved all your things up to the attic. I want you to sleep there from now on.
Why?
Because you keep me awake half the night with your tossing and turning, and you talk in your sleep.
I talk in my sleep? What do I say?
You keep yelling my name as if I was murdering you or something.
Oh, Millie.
You'll be all right in the attic.
Yes, Millie. Millie, can I talk to you for a minute?
What is it?
I saw Mr. Anderson again today. Millie, he says he's willing to let us live free for a year on his farm, so we can see how we like it. And if we do, we can buy it.
I told you before, I'm not going to live on any farm.
But, Millie, why can't we just try it? It won't cost us anything. If we don't like it, we can give it up.
No, I tell you, I won't let myself be trapped like that. You're perfectly willing to take a chance on farming, but you won't consider going to the city.
But there are 15 million men out of work. What chance would I have of getting a job in the city?
If you had an ounce of courage, you'd try. You don't hear men like Steve Hopkins whining about the depression and trying to make excuses for staying in this miserable hole?
Steve Hopkins, huh? So that's it. You've been seeing Steve Hopkins?
No. No, I haven't been seeing. You're wrong.
You're lying. It's written all over your face. You're afraid, aren't you? You're afraid of what I'm going to do to Steve Hopkins?
Now, Luke, listen to me. I tell you, there's nothing between Steve and myself.
When I'm finished with him, you'll never want to look at him again.
Where are you going?
To the village tavern. He's always there on Saturday nights.
Luke, come back. Luke, come back!
Hopkins, I want to talk to you.
Well, go ahead, Luke. No one's stopping you.
You've been making a play for my wife, and I don't like it.
You're either drunk or looking for a fight. I haven't spoken to your wife in a year.
You're lying. I know you've been seeing her these past weeks while I've been working.
You better take it easy, Luke. You're getting to the point where you're suspicious of every man in the village.
Don't try to smooth talk me.
I know you've been seeing her, and if you try seeing her again, I'll kill you.
Ah, you don't frighten me, Luke. And if I wanted to see your wife, not you or anyone else could stop me.
Oh, no? I'll show you.
Ready, boys? Grab it.
That's it.
Let go of me. Let go of me.
Hey, Sean.
Hold on then, boys. Now, Luke, as sheriff of this village, I'd advise you to take it easy.
I'll kill him. I'll kill him.
I don't like that kind of talk. Now, mind your manners. You'll spend the night in the lockup.
No man's going to make a fool out of me and live.
Now, get hold of yourself. If Steve was seeing your wife, it'd be common gossip in no time. You know that.
He may have fooled you folks, Sheriff, but I know better. You can protect him here, but just wait until I catch him alone. Just wait.
When I got home that night from the tavern, Millie was in her room, her door locked. I went up to the attic and tried to sleep, but I couldn't. I kept seeing Steve Hopkins' face, the way he had smiled at me in the tavern. He might have fooled the others, but I knew. And he knew that I did. Hours later, I managed to fall asleep. I dreamt that I was alone with Steve and we were fighting. He kept hitting me, but I couldn't feel his punches. All I could feel was my fist smashing again and again into his laughing face. I woke to hear church bells ringing. It was Sunday morning. All that day, except for meals, Millie avoided me. After supper, she went to her room, and I went down to my workshop in the cellar. The next morning, when I arrived at the quarry, the men were standing around in small groups, talking to each other. They stopped when they saw me. Then from one of the groups, I saw Sheriff Roden coming towards me.
Luke, I want to talk to you.
What about?
A number of things. Is your sledgehammer?
Why, sure. That's my initials on the handle. Why is it all wrapped up in paper?
I'll ask the questions, Luke. Where were you last night around 11 o'clock?
11 o'clock? In my workshop in the basement. Why?
Anybody with you?
Well, no, I was alone.
Luke, you're under arrest.
Under arrest? What for?
For the murder of Steve Hopkins.
For the murder of Steve Hopkins?
Yes. His body was found in his cabin an hour ago. He'd been brutally beaten to death last night around 11. With this sledgehammer, it was found at the scene of the crime.
You mean you think I did it?
It sure looks that way. Let's go, Luke.
No. No, I won't. I didn't kill Steve Hopkins.
You'll get your chance to prove you didn't. Now, let's go.
No. I didn't do it. I tell you, I'm innocent.
Grab him, man.
Let go of me.
That's it. Hold him while I get these cuffs on him.
I didn't do it. I tell you, I didn't do it.
Silence in the courtroom. Proceed, Mr. King.
Sheriff, will you tell the jury in your own words the time and circumstances under which you were notified of the death of Stephen Hopkins?
On October 12th of last year, I received a phone call at 7 o'clock a.m. from Sam Morris. Said that he'd just stopped by at Steve Hopkins' cabin to pick him up for work and had found him murdered. I told Sam not to touch anything. I got to the cabin 15 minutes later.
Will you tell the jury what you found?
Well, sir, that cabin looked like a slaughterhouse. I don't want to upset anyone with the details, so all I'll say is that Steve Hopkins had been beaten so badly, the body was beyond recognition.
You say the body was beaten beyond recognition.
That's right.
Then how were you able to identify it as being Steve Hopkins?
Well, first by the ring and wristwatch that was on the body. But most important of all, by the tattooing.
By the tattooing?
Yes, sir. Steve was quite a tattoo artist, and on his left arm he tattooed a heart with his initials and some girl's on it. I reckon just about everyone in this courtroom saw that tattoo on his arm at one time or another.
And although the body was beyond recognition, the tattoo was clearly identifiable.
Yes, sir. No question about that.
Sheriff, when had you last seen the deceased?
Saturday night, October 10th, at the village tavern.
Did anything unusual take place at the tavern that night?
Yes. Luke Adams came into the tavern around 9 o'clock. He accused Steve Hopkins of hanging around Mrs. Adams. Threatened to kill him.
Sheriff, can you remember Luke Adams' exact words when he made that threat?
Well, his last words before he left the tavern were, "Just wait till I catch him alone. Just wait."
I see. Now, Sheriff, when you arrived at the scene of the crime, did you find the death weapon?
Yes, sir. Steve Hopkins had been beaten to death with a sledgehammer. I found it in the cabin, covered with blood.
Was there any identification on the sledgehammer?
Yes, sir. On the handle were carved the initials, L.A.
Now, Mrs. Adams, you say there was no justification whatsoever for your husband's suspicions.
No, none at all.
In other words, he was mistaken when he accused Steve Hopkins of forcing his attentions on you.
Yes, he was.
I see. Now, your husband has testified that on the night of the murder, he was working in the cellar of your home. Where were you that night, Mrs. Adams?
Upstairs in my room.
Did you see your husband at all that night?
No, I didn't.
Would it have been possible for him to have left the cellar that night without your knowing about it?
Yes, it certainly would.
Silence in the courtroom. The prisoner will rise. Luke Adams, you have been found guilty of murder in the first degree with a recommendation for mercy. The court hereby sentences you to 25 years imprisonment in the state penitentiary.
Years imprisonment. Yes, Judge, that was your sentence. The towering iron gates of the penitentiary closed behind me. I no longer had a name, only a number. A year after I was in prison, I was informed that Millie had divorced me and disappeared. With that, my last tie with the outside world was gone. Years passed. World-shaking events took place. And scarce reached the prison workshop, for I spent long days repairing shoes. Then one day I was notified by the warden that I'd been paroled. I was free. The gates of the penitentiary opened, and once again I joined the living. I came to the city, a stranger, and found employment in a shoe repair store. Day after day I stood by the store window repairing shoes, watching the hurrying crowds. Then late one afternoon, I saw a woman pass. A woman who was a stranger, and yet wasn't. With a sudden shock, I realized that Millie had just passed. Throwing down my tools, I rushed out of the shop and down the street after her. I found her in the crowd and followed. She had hardly changed at all in the 16 years that had gone by. There were streaks of gray in her hair, but she was as beautiful as ever. I followed her block after block, and soon we were in a residential section. She turned up the path to a large cottage, unlocked the front door, and went in. A moment later, I was ringing the doorbell.
Yes, what is it?
Don't you recognize me?
No, I'm afraid not.
It's me, Millie, it's me.
How dare you force your way in here, my... Luke.
Yeah, Millie. Luke, after all these years.
But you're in prison.
I was paroled 6 months ago.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, Luke. You must leave now. I'm busy right now. I can't
Millie,
talk.
Who is that? Millie, who are you talking to? Who's he?
Steve. Steve Hopkins.
Oh, you're mistaken. The name is Reed, Robert Reed.
Steve, it's Luke.
Luke? You're not dead. You're not dead. The body in the cabinet wasn't yours.
No, no.
I went to prison for your murder, but you're alive. They said I killed you, but you're alive.
Yes.
You let them put me in prison. You framed me.
Luke, you must listen to me.
You framed me.
No, Luke, don't. I didn't...
You framed
me. Luke, let go of him. Let go of him.
Don't, Luke. Don't. Whose body was that they found in your cabin?
A young hobo I picked up by the railroad tracks.
But the tattooing on the arm.
After I killed him with your sledgehammer, I tattooed his left arm to look exactly like mine. I put my wristwatch and ring on the body and then beat him beyond recognition.
And then you ran away, leaving me to stand trial for murder.
Luke, what are you going to do?
What am I going to do? You remember Judge Marshall, don't you, Millie?
Yes, I remember him.
Well, I read in the papers a few weeks ago that the judge lives here, in a fine mansion overlooking the city.
What are you getting at?
Steve and I are going to visit Judge Marshall.
No, Luke, no. You know what that would mean.
Luke, we have some money. If you'll just forget what's happened, we'll give you money, plenty of it.
Yes, well, we'll give you $10,000. $20,000.
I'm not interested in money. Come on, Steve.
Luke, you can't do this to me. You can't.
Luke, you once loved me. For my sake,
don't. Come along, Steve.
No, I won't go. If they find out about that hobo, they'll hang me. I wouldn't have a chance.
You'll come, Steve, one way or another. Understand?
Yes. Yes.
He didn't want to come here, but in the end, he came. In the end, he came.
Incredible. Simply incredible. The man is a monster to have done what he did. Where is this man, Steve Hopkins, now?
He's out on the porch, Judge.
Bring him in, Mr. Adams. I want to see that man.
All right, Judge.
Why are you carrying him?
He can't walk.
Can't walk? What's wrong with him?
He's dead. Here, Judge.
Dead?
Yes, Judge.
But I understood he was alive.
He was. Up until a half hour ago.
You mean you...
Yeah, Judge. I put my hands around his throat and squeezed. Squeezed until he was dead. Huh. I killed him. And there's nothing you can do to me, Judge. Nothing. Remember, you sent me to prison for killing Steve Hopkins? For 16 years, I rotted in prison. I've paid my debt to society for Steve Hopkins' death. I've paid it. There's nothing you can do to me now. Nothing.
Again. Did you enjoy our little trip? What happened to Luke Adams? Well, his case became one of the most celebrated controversies of the day. Some legal minds claimed he couldn't be sent to prison again. He'd already been punished. Other legal experts insisted he should be tried again. But in the midst of this raging controversy, poor Luke Adams died, and his case was never decided. What do you think? Should Luke Adams have been tried for murder again? Or having already served 16 years for Steve Hopkins' murder, should he have gone free? I should like to know what your verdict is. Send your letters to the Mysterious Traveler, care of Mutual Broadcasting System, New York 18, New York. Just heard The Mysterious Traveler, a series of dramas of the strange and terrifying. All characters in today's story were fictitious, and any resemblance to the names of actual persons was purely coincidental. In today's cast were Maurice Tarplin, Art Carney, Elspeth Eric,
Frank Behrens, and Jackson Beck. Original music was played by Paul Taubman. Mysterious Traveler is written, produced, and directed by Bob Arthur and David Kogan. Listen next week to a tale titled
The Ivory Elephant.
Another strange and suspenseful tale of the Mysterious Traveler. This program has come to you from our New York studios. Another program of tense and dramatic action will follow in just a minute. Stay tuned to this station for Official Detective. Carl Caruso speaking. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
The Man Who Died Twice, an episode of The Mysterious Traveler from February 24th, 1948. It's the Upstate Radio Theater. I'm Jake Longwell. If you want to get in touch, the email address is qualityradioproductions@gmail.com. And our blog and website, where you'll find much more info about the radio theater, as well as streaming audio of this and previous episodes, qualityradioproductions.blogspot.com. This is program number 1712. We'll wrap up the hour with some classic police drama, as we have an episode of Richard Diamond, Private Detective. Starring song and dance man Dick Powell, the series debuted on NBC in 1949, but soon after moved to ABC Radio. Others in the cast include Virginia Gregg as Powell's girlfriend, Helen, and Alan Reed, probably best known to most as the longtime voice of Fred Flintstone, starring as Sergeant Walt Levinson. This broadcast is program number 116 in the series from ABC, January 4th, 1952. It's the Merry-Go-Round Case.
The makers of Camel Cigarettes present Dick Powell as Richard Diamond, Private Detective. Transcribed is Richard Diamond, Private Detective, starring Dick Powell.
Diamond Detective Agency.
Your crime is my crime.
Oh, no.
Hi-ho, Helen.
Oh, Rick, honestly, the slogans are bad enough, but must you set them to music?
Now, dear, dear, this is the age of the singing commercial. Keep with the times, kid.
I'm the gal who could have married a Yale man, and what do I pick? A singing detective.
Well, you just appreciate the finer things of life, Helen. Hang up and call me back.
What?
Just thought of a new slogan.
Oh, Rick, you can preview your new slogan tonight. You are coming over tonight, aren't you?
I are.
Well, so agreeable. This can only mean one thing. You haven't got a client.
Oh, Helen, you're so fiendishly clever.
Seriously, Rick. I'll be expecting you at 7. And just once, try to be on time.
Now, that is a challenge. But I... Well, bless my little square head.
I might have known it. Client?
Even more surprising.
Rick, I'm in no mood for jokes.
It's Lieutenant Walter Levinson, dear, and he's no mood for jokes.
The old grouch. What's Walt doing there?
I'll ask him. What are you doing here, Walt?
Rick, this is serious business. Finish your conversation, then we'll talk.
Oh.
What did he say?
Honey, I'd better hang up. For once, Walt isn't kidding. See you at 7. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks, Rick.
Well, what's it all about, Fatty? I haven't seen you look like this for a long time.
I was in the neighborhood. I thought I'd stop by and tell you the news myself. A punk named Smiley Brill shot one of our cops, Rick.
Oh, Smiley Brill, huh? Didn't know a punk like Smiley had the nerve to pull a trigger.
Cop caught him breaking into a pawn shop. Smiley got scared and fired.
Uh-huh. Walt, I'm sorry to hear this, but I don't get it. Why act like a lost soul? Lots of cops get shot up. They take that chance when they put on a badge.
I know that, Rick. This cop was Ben Johnson.
What? Come again, Walt.
Johnson, Rick. Ben Johnson.
There are times when words can't describe a feeling. This was one of those times. Years ago, when I was a green rookie cop, I made lots of mistakes, got discouraged. But old Ben Johnson always took me under his wing and helped me over the rough spots. Ben helped a lot of rookies like me, and everyone knew it and loved him for it. Yeah, now I knew why Walt's expression looked like the world had ended, and I wasn't glad I knew.
Happened early this morning, Rick.
Where's Ben now?
General Hospital. Doc gives him a 50-50 chance.
What about Smiley Brill? You got him?
No. I set up a dragnet, but he's slimy. He might slip through. Rick, I was hoping maybe you'd like to help us get him.
Well, you know I will, Walt. Only if I find him, I won't guarantee you'll get him in one piece.
Now cut it out, Rick. You know how I feel. I'd like to break Smiley with my bare hands. Only I'm a cop. So are you, even without the old badge.
I'll skip the speeches. Where do I start?
Smiley hangs around the Bowery quite a bit. Chances are he's hiding down there. Well, the Bowery boys don't talk much to police, but they might to you.
Well, I have some friends down there. I might get a lead.
Keep in touch with my office. And remember, Rick, I want Smiley alive, if possible.
Sure, Walt. If possible. I got in my car and drove toward the Bowery. I kept seeing two faces in front of me. One, a white-haired policeman ready for retirement, lying in a hospital fighting for his life. And the other, a weasel-faced punk with a slimy smile. You don't often get mad in my business. It doesn't pay off. But there are times when it can't be helped. In the Bowery, I began looking for Leo Watts, a little panhandler with a big heart. I'd done Leo a favor a few months back, and I knew I could count on him to return it. I finally located him in a mission, working over a bowl of hot soup. Well, hello, Leo.
Huh? Well, Richard Diamond, what brings you down here? You broke?
Well, not quite, Leo.
Sit down, have some soup. It's free.
Well, I'd rather have some help, Leo.
Oh, sure, Rick. Anything I can do, you know that.
Tell me, do you know a guy named Smiley Brill?
Smiley Brill, yeah. I seen him around. I don't know him so well, though.
What about his friends, Leo? Know anyone he might go to if he was in trouble?
I'm afraid not, Rick. I can ask around, though. Some of the boys might know.
Would you do that, Leo? I'd appreciate it.
Sure. You sit tight, Ricky, and finish my soup. I'll be right back.
Leo disappeared, and I waited in the mission. A little old lady brought me a fresh bowl of soup, gave me a lecture, and left with a rewarded attitude after I promised to give up Muscatel. Finally, about 20 minutes later, Leo returned.
Not much, Rick. But something to start on. Smiley had a girl he used to see a lot last year. Whether he's still seen her, I don't know.
What's her name?
Jewel Sanker. Dances at the Gaiety down the street. Quite a dance, too.
Well, thanks, Leo. I'll have a talk with her.
If she can't help you, meet me back here in a few hours. Maybe I can dig up some more of Smiley's past.
Good, good. Only suppose I meet you out front instead, Leo. I just can't take another bowl of soup. At the Gaiety Theater, I found a stage doorman with a case of bad eyesight. $5 made it even worse, and I got by him without as much as a hey you. Jewel Sanker was on stage, and I waited in the wings. The boys wanted more, but Jewel threw them a kiss and skipped off the stage right into the arms of yours truly.
Why didn't you watch where you're standing?
I'm sorry, dear, but I've given up Muscatel and have to have some vices.
Huh?
Oh, skip it. Jewel, I'd like to talk to you.
So would every guy in that audience out there. Of course, you don't look like most of the guys. Your clothes are pressed.
Carry a handkerchief, too. I'm a real dude.
Oh, you're cute. Only I've got no time to talk. I've got to change for my next number.
Mind if I walk along to your dressing room?
Suit yourself.
Jewel, I'm looking for an old friend of yours.
I've got a lot of old friends.
This one's named Smiley Brill.
Oh, Jim. A real nothing. What do you want with that stoop?
A little talk.
You're a great one for having talks with people.
I was a lonely child.
Here's where I changed. Do you want to come in?
Silly question.
Oh, stop dreaming. I've got a screen in here.
Well, that should bring my blood pressure back down to normal.
Wait till you see my next costume. It's made out of carnations.
Oh, I bet you smell divine.
Yeah. Sit down, I'll be right out. What did you say you wanted to see?
Smiley Brill.
Oh, yeah. Him and me broke up.
When did you see him last?
About a week ago. Haven't seen him for about 3 months, and then he shows up. He wants me to go out with him again.
Did you?
No, he's a bum. Him and me always used to fight about him not working. When we went out, I always had to pay the check. There. How do you like the costume?
Well, I can see why it didn't take you long to get in it. Only, aren't you afraid those flowers might wilt?
Yeah, that's the idea.
I see. Getting back to Smiley.
Oh, forget him. He's a deadbeat. Besides, I've got to get back on stage.
Just one more question. When you saw Smiley last week, did he say where he was living?
Uh-uh.
Well, do you know of anywhere he might be?
No. Wait a minute. He tried to give me some line about working. I said something about the merry-go-round.
Merry-go-round?
Yes. Said he had a part-time job now and... Oh, I don't remember all he said. Look, I've got to go. Time for my number. Drop around again sometime, huh?
Glad you got here early, Rick. How'd you make out with Jewel?
Oh, she doesn't know where Smiley is, Leo. But tell me, is there any place around here called the merry-go-round? A bar, maybe?
Merry-go-round? No, not around here. Why?
Never mind. How did you do?
Well, I asked around. Smiley ain't been around the street much these days, but I did find out where Bertie Morgan lives. A couple of years back, Bertie and Smiley served time together. Guys get pretty close when they're in stir.
Yeah. Well, maybe Bertie knows where Smiley would hide. Worth a chance anyway, Leo.
Well, here's Bertie's address on this paper. I hope you can make it out. Oh, Bertie's a real nut. Keeps nothing but birds in his room. The place looks like a pet shop.
Thanks, Leo. See you later. I started up the street toward the address Leo had given me. Finding Smiley Brill was developing into a slow search. All I could do was keep questioning people who might know Smiley's whereabouts and hope for a break. I located Bertie Morgan's rooming house, but I didn't go right in. Instead, I went into a drugstore on the corner and put in a call to Walt Levinson.
Homicide, Levinson.
Rick, Walt, have your men turn up anything on Brill yet?
Not a thing. How about you?
Well, so far, nothing. I'm following up another lead, though, now. If it doesn't take me anywhere, I'm afraid I'll be stuck.
Don't quit now, Rick. Just heard from the hospital, Ben Johnson. Didn't make it.
Oh, no.
Follow that lead, Rick. Get Smiley.
Yeah, Walt, I'll get him. If I have to stay on his trail till doomsday, I'll get him.
And now, back to Richard Diamond, Private Detective, starring Dick Powell.
So Ben Johnson hadn't made it. Now I was looking for a killer. A killer named Smiley Brill. I crossed the street, went into the rooming house. Bertie Morgan had been in prison with Smiley, and Bertie lived in room number 12. I went there.
Yeah.
Bertie Morgan was a little man with a nose that resembled a parrot's beak. He had beady, bird-like eyes that stared straight at you and never seemed to blink. Behind him, I could see that his room was filled with caged birds, all chirping. Bertie Morgan was well-named.
Yeah? What you want, bud?
Well, I'm selling a new brand of bird seed. Thought you just might be in the market.
Bird seed, eh?
That's right.
I got plenty of bird seed.
Oh, but none like this, friend.
Get your foot out of the door.
Now, Bertie, think of your canary.
Beat it.
Now move aside, Bertie. I'm coming in. Oh, now that's better.
What's the big idea of forcing your way in here?
Sorry, Bertie, but I'm tired of being polite.
You got no right here. Look, you're scaring my birds.
Well, they'll get over it. Now, you tell me, what about Smiley Brill?
Well, what about him?
He's a friend of yours, isn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, I got no friends. I just stay here and tend to my birds. Birds I like, people I don't.
You seen Brill since your prison days together?
Sure, but that don't make us bosom pals. See, who are you?
How long ago since you've seen him?
Month, maybe two.
You sure of that?
Sure, I'm sure.
How long were you in prison together?
I don't have to answer your question.
You want a broken nose?
Wait a minute, now look.
Well, I'm not kidding, pal. I want answers. How long did you share a cell with Smiley?
2 years. By that, I mean that when you get out, you got to pal around together.
No, but it does mean you might know where Smiley is now. In 2 years, he must have told you a lot about the people he knew, where he hung around.
Well, sure, yeah, but...
Sit down, Bertie.
Huh?
Sit down. Now, tell me everything you remember Smiley talking about in jail.
Well, look, that was a long time ago.
Then refresh your memory. Who did he say his friends were? Think back, Bertie, then start talking. I was being hard on Bertie, but it was my last chance. He began talking about everything he could remember that he and Smiley had talked about. Girls, sports, anything. Finally, after about 10 minutes, Bertie was getting tired, and he still hadn't said anything that might give me a lead.
Give me a break, huh? Listen to my birds. They're hungry. I gotta feed them.
Now, they can wait. You still haven't said anything important, Bertie.
Yeah, so how should I know what you think's important? I told you what I remember him saying, that's all.
What did Smiley plan on doing when he got out of jail?
Having a good time, that's all he wanted.
Did he talk about work? What kind of a job is he going to look for?
Job, Smiley? Don't make me laugh. He didn't want to go to work. His uncle even wrote and offered him a job, but this guy's strictly a bum.
Well, what about his uncle? You didn't mention him before.
I didn't think of him before.
Well, you're thinking of him now. Tell me about him.
He's an old geezer. Joe Brill raised Smiley after his mom and pa kicked out.
You say he offered Smiley a job. What kind of a job?
Oh, handyman, I guess. The old boy runs a business over on 34th Street, a kid place.
A what?
Oh, you know, one of them toyland spots. He's got a corner lot there with some rides on it, electric swings and that sort of thing. I went past it once. It's a nice place.
Rides for kids, huh? Merry-go-round?
Huh?
This place. It has a merry-go-round?
Yeah, a big one. Hey, why don't you go ride it and leave me alone?
Maybe I will, Bertie. Give me the address of the place, and you can go feed your birds. It was the first break I'd had. Smiley's girlfriend had told me that he was working at a merry-go-round. Now I knew where it was. It was getting dark as I turned up 34th Street, but I spotted the lights of the Toyland. Parked, went toward the merry-go-round in the center of the lot. It was the only ride still operating. There were two or three children riding the wooden animals around and around. In the center of the carousel, I spotted an old man standing beside a big lever. As I approached, the man pulled the lever toward him, and the carousel slowly stopped moving around.
Okay, kids, all off. Come on now. Get off there, sonny. Run along home now.
Mr. Brill.
That's right. Only I'm closing up now.
Well, I don't want to ride. I just want to ask you some questions.
What about?
About your nephew.
Huh?
Yes, I'm looking for Smiley. He was working here a week ago.
Well, yeah, he was, but he ain't here now.
Well, where is he?
I don't know. Hasn't been around for a few days. Who are you and why are you looking for Smiley?
Well, I'm a private detective, Mr. Brill. Smiley's in trouble. Real trouble.
Oh. Listen, I gotta go back to the shack over there. Turn out the lights. City raises Cain if I stay open after 6.
Well, I'll walk with you. You know, you don't seem surprised that your nephew's in trouble, Brill.
Surprised? Mister, anything that boy does is no surprise to me. Tried to raise him right, but he run wild. Figured if I give him a job here, he might settle down. I was wrong, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Have you heard from him since this morning?
Nope. Oh, this is it. Mister, would you mind reaching up there and pull that light switch? It's too high for me.
Oh, sure, sure. There. Now, how about...
Yeah. Oh!
When I pulled that switch to turn the lights out, Brill decided to put my lights out, too. He must have hit me with an old piece of pipe, but whatever it was, it caused the blood to rush past my eyes and a million rockets to go off in my head. I don't know how long I was out, but when I came to, I was inside the shack, and I wasn't alone. In the corner stood the old man, but standing over me was the man I'd spent all day to find, Smiley Brill.
Come on, Diamond, come on. You ain't dead yet.
Well, Smiley Brill, brave man with a gun.
Yeah, brave enough to take care of you, Shamus.
Smiley, cut out your yapping and get out of here while you can.
Shut up, they got a dragnet out for me. I might be picked up alone, but Diamond here gets along real swell with the bulls. He's gonna help me get through.
Oh, you're crazy, Smiley. You'll never get through. I may get along with the police, but so did Ben Johnson. You try and make a break and the first cop will shoot you on sight. You're a dead man, Smiley.
You know that smart talk coming from a guy on the wrong side of this gun? Now get up on your feet.
Where's your car, Smiley?
Out and back. You still got Diamond's gun?
Yeah.
Well, keep it on him. I'll check around outside to make sure it's all clear. And don't take any chances. If Diamond so much as blinks an eyelash, pull the trigger.
Well, Mr. Brill, you must feel pretty proud of your nephew.
Keep quiet. Smiley's a good boy. Just a little while, that's all.
Oh, sure, sure. Tell me, Brill, what's going to happen to you? Smiley makes a break for it and leaves you behind, and for helping him escape, you'll be hauled in as an accessory to murder.
Murder? What are you talking about?
Well, why do you think your nephew's running?
Smiley got too much to drink. He stole a car.
So that's the line he gave you, huh? Oh,
sure. Now, look, mister. I'm the only family Smiley's got. When his pa died, I promised to look after him. Now he's in trouble. I gotta help him get away. So you just stay right there.
And this trouble he's in, you think it's car stealing? Well, it's murder, Brill. Smiley killed a cop.
You lie. Smiley's wild, but he wouldn't do that.
Oh, wouldn't he? Well, why did the police have a dragnet out? To catch a car thief? Oh, no, murder, Brill. You think it's your duty to protect him?
I wouldn't protect a killer, but Smiley's no killer. Now, you're telling lies, that's all.
Well, he'll be coming back soon. You'll help him get away. You'll help a killer get away.
Well, I'll ask him. If you're telling the truth, well... Wait till he gets back. I still think you lie.
I'm not lying, Brill. And we're not waiting till Smiley comes back.
Stay back!
Why? Smiley didn't tell you he killed a cop. That was because he knew you wouldn't help a killer. And if you wouldn't help a killer, you'd hardly turn killer yourself. No, you won't shoot me, Mr. Brill. Now, I'll take my gun.
No!
Give it to me!
No!
There.
Okay, mister, okay. Maybe I couldn't kill you, but Smiley's no killer either. You lied about that murder. You're after him for stealing the car, and he's going to have a chance. He's just a wild boy.
Come back here.
Hey, Smiley, look out. He's got a gun.
I shoved the old man away and stepped outside. Smiley had been coming back across the grounds, and the old man's warning made him stop. Then he saw me. It was dark, and we both missed. Then Smiley dove for cover and began firing again. I crouched behind the motor box of the electric swing. Smiley! It's all you, Smiley! Come on out!
Come and get me, Samus! I can see as well in the dark as you can!
Smiley was in a good spot and he knew it. It was dark, but he was familiar with the grounds. He could edge from one cover to another. There were no more shots for a while. I knew he'd change positions, but I'd have a hard time finding him in the dark. And then I remembered the light switch beside the shack. I edged toward it. I reached the shack and stood up. I pointed my gun out toward the lot and sent my left hand up to the switch. Then I pushed. The lights went on and I spotted Smiley standing in the center of the merry-go-round. He looked stunned at the flood of light. Drop it, Smiley!
Why, you...
I got him. He staggered, then fell against the big control lever in the center of the machine. The machine started going round, and the painted animals moved up and down as they circled Smiley's still body. I stood there and watched. Funny, but I didn't even feel sorry for Smiley. After all, how many cop killers have music at their funerals?
Rick.
Yes, Helen, dear?
I forgive you for being late.
Well, now that makes my little heart go pitter-patter all over the place.
Only there's something I want to ask you.
Mm-hmm.
That dancer, you say, Jewel, was she pretty?
I suppose you could say she was, especially in that costume made out of carnations.
I hope you were on your good behavior.
Well, I didn't pick any flowers, if that's what you mean.
Rick, I hate to sound nagging, but, well, I worry about you. In every case, you seem to run into a blonde or a redhead or a brunette, and they all seem to be pretty.
Now, isn't that just like a woman? Here I get slugged on the head, shot at, and meet a girl. All you worry about is the girl.
Oh, you poor dear. There. Does your head feel better?
Oh, yes, yes. Honey, keep rubbing it. I might even feel well enough to sing a song.
I knew this conversation would get around to that sooner or later.
Helen, you are so suspicious and so right.
I get a warm feeling when you're by my side. The kind of warm feeling that my kiss can't hide. Hold me tight and hold me strong. It's so right, it just can't be wrong. Just as long as you're with me, I'll always find my way. Your love is like a candle that turns the night to day. My heart is yours, and come what may, that warm feeling is here to stay.
That's nice.
Thank you, dear.
Rick?
Mm-hmm.
Would I look nice in a costume made out of carnations?
Oh, honey, honey, honey. You'd look wonderful in a costume made out of poison ivy. Come here.
Now, Rick. Rick, stop. Rick, stop. Rick, you stopped.
Aren't we full of surprises tonight?
Tonight's transcribed adventure of Richard Diamond was written and directed by Dick Carr, with music by Frank Worth. Virginia Gregg played the part of Helen Asher, and Alan Reed was Lieutenant Levinson. Others in the cast were Howard McNear, Herb Butterfield, and Paul Richards. Be sure to listen to another great Camel show, Vaughn Monroe and the Camel Caravan, every Saturday night. Listen next week for another exciting adventure of Richard Diamond, starring Dick Powell. This is your FBI. The official broadcast from the files of the FBI follows immediately. Stay tuned. This program came to you from Hollywood. America is sold on the American Broadcasting Company.
The Merry-Go-Round Case, an episode of Richard Diamond, Private Detective, from January 4th, 1952. And that will do it for this hour of Old Time Radio. I'm Jake Longwell. Thank you, as always, for joining me. Please tune in again for another hour of sounds from radio's golden age. The Upstate Radio Theater is distributed by Quality Radio Productions.